First, there are a lot of punchlines, memes, and jokes about being ignored via text or instant message. The internet loves talking about it, ranting about it, and getting advice on it. Here's a sampling from the plethora of YouTube videos on being ignored.
Can we have a moment for all of our friends who aren't texting us back?
A viewer wants to know how she can handle her friend who does not return texts or emails.
Okay, today we're going to talk about what happens if a girl, you get her phone number and then she stops answering.
So why weren't you answering any of my phone calls or my texts all week? You called me once, I missed it. And I texted you a few times. No, you didn't. Yeah, I did.
It bothers a lot of people, from YouTubers to the cast of Dance Moms, but the whole point of lightning-fast communication seemed to be getting a hold of someone immediately. When it comes to texts and emails, that's not always the case. Research shows that one of the reasons Americans enjoy texting is because you don't have to respond immediately, like picking up that phone call, even if your phone is in your pocket most of the time. Naomi Baron is a professor of linguistics at American University and author of Words on Screen, The Fate of Reading in a Digital World. She studies how people use technology to connect. Naomi, welcome to Central Time.
I'm delighted to be here.
So what is the appeal of texting for us Americans in particular in the first place?
We tend to be control freaks, and we tend to think that if we have reached out to somebody else, of course that person wants to immediately get back to us. Even though, as you just said, the technology says, I'll send this to you, a text, for example, and then you'll get back to me when it's good for you. Our problem is that we have sped up the time gap we're willing to wait before we think it's reasonable to get a response.
I want to contrast this with the old-fashioned calling someone on their landline phone. And some people, I think maybe younger people mostly, look back and say, wait a minute, you made a device in somebody's house ring when you wanted it to ring and expected them to come to the phone and talk to you right then? It was a very different sort of demand structure then.
But then we invented voicemail. And sometime around the early 80s, voicemail went commercial. It was commercial for businesses before that, but it became something you could have in your own home. So if you didn't want to answer a call and it came in over dinner, it would just go to your answering machine. And we got used to saying we can decide whether we want to pick up that phone or not. When telephones were first invented, the assumption is that telephone rang, because they were very expensive in those days, some emergency was going on, and you had to pick up the phone because somebody died. They probably weren't going to say you won the lottery. There were no lotteries. But the notion of how soon you had, whether you had to respond, at first it was everybody had to. Then we said, okay, we can control things a little bit, put it on the answering machine. But with the newest technologies, we have assumed, because the message goes really fast, that we should respond really fast if we care.
And now we're in this situation, it seems like, and I've read a lot of people talk about this, that in addition to the message itself, right, I text you, you text me back or not, or in a certain period of time, I'm reading a lot of message in how quickly you respond, not just in the words you respond with.
Correct. And part of the problem is people actually are sometimes driving vehicles, or they're on planes where they don't happen to have an internet access, or heaven help us, they're sitting in my classroom, and I would really prefer they not respond right now. But what has happened, particularly for teenagers and young adults, I mean, there's more to the story, but particularly for those age groups, there's a lot of insecurity. If I don't respond immediately, maybe that's sending you a message, as it were, that I don't care about you. But if you have invited me to come to lunch or to go to the movies tonight and I don't get right back to you, you may move on to somebody else because I didn't care about you, right? So we have ratcheted up the expectation structure. We've ratcheted up the anxiety structure. And we didn't really need to do this. When email first came along, it was very slow, depending on what kinds of service you had and whatever. Sometimes it could take a week to get a message out. It was sort of like sending something through the U.S. Postal Service. But then as it became faster and faster, our expectation structure sped up as well. And it's problematic because we shouldn't, but there's so little that we really have to respond to immediately because there's some emergency. We've turned our lives, our daily lives, into emergencies.
Talking to Naomi Barron from American University, author of the book Words on Screen. We're talking about why and when it's acceptable to not reply to a text or email or other communication quickly or at all. Naomi, it seems like etiquette rules develop slowly and our communication systems are developing quickly and one never catches up with the other. Is that part of the problem, that we don't have enough time with one method of communication to figure out how we're supposed to do it?
The question is, what counts as etiquette these days? The days of Emily Post are gone. What counts as etiquette? Well, back in the day of email, you would lurk, you would see what other people did, and you'd say, oh, that's what you're supposed to do when sending an email. With instant messaging, it became, who are you, what's your circle of friends, how do they behave, how quickly do they respond, and so forth, because instant messaging is not always instant. By the way, I did some studies on that to show you may wait and say, well, what do I want to say, and do I want to edit this before I send it out? Do I want to show this to a friend, my potential response, before I send it? But what's happened now is there is no shared consensus. Remember, nobody governs the Internet in a very profound way. And the same thing is true for so-called rules for how you respond. The rules basically are what your friends do, rather than there being some larger social consensus about what's appropriate. And that's the challenge.
One tricky thing is how much communication there is. Just thinking about not even my personal life here, just in my business life, I get a lot of emails. There's Slack for some purposes. There's texting for some other purposes. A little bit of social media messaging in there, too. It seems like we're living in a constant sense of triage of what we need to deal with right now.
That is true. It is also, at least for the personal messages, much more an American phenomenon than it is something that happens worldwide. We somehow think that whatever we do in the United States, any smart person anywhere on the globe would do. But when you check the numbers of how many texts Americans send per day and compare that with other countries, I'm thinking particularly of statistics for Western Europe, they're a lot more stable than we tend to be, in that there isn't so much a rush. You don't have to keep going back and forth with volleys all the time. You send what you want to send, and then you move on. You have a life. You go to a restaurant. You actually talk with your friends. You put your phone away.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you assign value judgments to how we're dealing with our communication here. It sounds like you do a little bit. Where do you see us going wrong?
Well, if I assign a value judgment, it's because I worry about our psyches. And our psyches have come to say, and some of this is particularly American, that I always have to show how wonderful I am. So you take Facebook, and various people have done studies on Facebook, myself included, and I wrote a chapter of a book a couple books ago called My Best Day, because when I interviewed people about what they put on Facebook, what they put for a photograph, because it used to be you could only put one photograph, a young woman said to me, I put a picture of me on my best day, when I really look good. That's not how I usually look, but I present myself in the way that the sociologist Irving Goffman used to talk about presentation of self. I present myself so people will think I look really good. There's a lot of discussion of Facebook right now on how the more you use Facebook, the more depressed you tend to be, the more lonely you tend to be, because everybody else is having such a wonderful time. Look at all those photographs. Look at all those status updates. And you feel, what's wrong with me? I'm not vacationing enough. I don't look good enough. So we have boxed ourselves into a communication corner, both in terms of I always have to respond and in terms of how we make ourselves look on our social networks. And it's not psychologically healthy for us. It's not a value judgment on my part. The psychologists will tell you the same thing.
Naomi Barron is with us, professor of linguistics at American University, author of the book Words on Screen, The Fate of Reading in a Digital World. We're looking at how we communicate and ignore each other through texting, instant messaging, and other technology. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Have you been on either side of this argument? Why didn't you get back to me? Why didn't you respond to my text, my email, my Facebook message, whatever? Do you think we are too quick to respond, too quick to expect other people to respond? Does it bother you when people don't get back to you from that text or email or whatever you're using? What expectations or rules do you set for yourself or others when it comes to messaging? And are we just sending too darn many texts, emails, etc.? Call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Naomi Barron, professor of linguistics at American University. We're looking at texting and email and when we choose not to respond. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about texting, emailing, instant messaging? Do you feel like we're using it too much, like you're having to use it too much? Do you feel like there are different expectations between you and others about when you get back to each other? How quickly? Does it bug you when people don't get back? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. To your calls now, Melissa is with us in Peshtigo. Melissa, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you think?
Well, I think every now and then you need to put the phone away, take a break from it, and I think that on the weekends, put your phone away, charge it, and leave it on the counter, leave it in your purse. And you don't need it glued to your hand all the time. You need that mental break to rejuvenate, regenerate, be ready for work on Monday morning. And if you constantly have your phone in your hand and are worrying about responding and getting hold of people and Facebooking and Instagramming and Snapchatting, you don't get the mental break that you need to really, just be ready to go back to work and face everything on Mondays.
Is this something you're doing yourself on the weekends, Melissa?
Yeah, I do. And it's interesting the comments you get back from people asking, where are you? Why didn't you answer my text? Or what are you doing? And I'm like, well, why didn't you call me? I would answer a call before I would answer a text.
Melissa, thank you so much for your call, and I'm glad we answered it. Naomi, there's a lot there. What do you think of her put the phone away and recharge idea, first of all?
I love it. And actually, there are a number of schools, both high schools and colleges, or classes within colleges, that are saying, we're going to take a week where you're not going to use your phone, and you will survive. You will live to tell the tale. And people write articles on after interviewing the students who have done this, and they tell you they're very anxious for the first couple of hours or maybe the first day. And after that, they start talking with each other, and they start relaxing and feeling much better about themselves. So I think it's an excellent plan. We need as a society to do it. I also think about what I saw when I was in Japan this past October. Literally in Tokyo, there are painted signs on the street saying no use of cell phones. And partly that's because people are bumping into each other and getting hit by traffic because they're using their phones for the equivalent of texting. But partially it's because in Japan there's a social etiquette that says when you're moving in public space, you should be with other people. Even if you don't know them, you're still part of a society. So there are some places, both here in the States and in Japan, that are trying to do something, and we need to do more of this.
Melissa, thanks a lot for your call. We'll go next to Robert on the line in Onalaska. Robert, hi.
Hi, how you doing there? And hi to your guest. I just wanted to talk about, I think that there is actually too much email, phone traffic going on. So what I like to do is, when it comes to my personal family members, I make sure that they don't do anything like send me an email or anything like that. They have to automatically send me a message, a voicemail message. Otherwise, it's not important. When it comes to texting, I don't accept texting from my personal family members because I want them to actually call me. And that's what I have to do in order to control the traffic. And I don't even have Facebook. And I do that on purpose so that they can actually interact with me and just to make sure that they actually talk to me.
Robert, thank you so much. So both of our callers, Naomi, making a case for calling, but it seems like more and more we're allergic to making that phone call.
We're allergic for a couple of reasons, and businesses and organizations are also getting allergic. If you have a son or daughter who's in college and you try calling that son or daughter and the call goes to voicemail, the son or daughter calls back and says, hi, Mom, or hi, Dad, what's up? and you say, did you get my voicemail? And I say, well, just tell me what's up. We do not listen to voicemail anymore. My university has now taken away, for anybody who wants to take it away, voicemail. So it's written communication, in this case email, or if they're not in their office when I call, I can't reach them. A number of large businesses, including Coca-Cola and a number of telecommunications businesses and a number of banks, have said, we don't want to clog your life with email, with voicemail, because it takes too long to listen. True. Therefore, the only way to communicate is in writing. And I find that to be problematic, because there's some things where a voice is actually a very useful way to go. It is true, it takes much longer to listen to the same number of words than it does to read them. But I am not a typist. I'm a human. I mean, typists are human beings, but my life is not, should not be spent totally in typing. I should spend it talking with people face to face. The next best thing is on some kind of a telephone, whether it's voice over internet protocol or whether it's a real telephone. But I like your caller's approach. Mm. Because there's so much more in their communication that we can express in speaking that doesn't quite come across when you make me type all the time.
Naomi, I'm all for the human voice, given my job. Thank you so much for spending this time today. I really appreciate it.
You're so welcome. I've enjoyed this.
Naomi Barron is a professor of linguistics at American University. She's the author of the book Words on Screen, The Fate of Reading in a Digital World. She joined us to look at how we communicate and sometimes ignore each other through instantaneous communication like texting, social media, email, and more. You can share your thoughts and experiences. Tweet us at Central Time WPR or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.